Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link with Mayor Sumte Latus. Coming up, the opposition in Guinea suspends protests over the timing of local elections, claiming three people were killed and 50 injured in clashes with police. Prospects for a solution to the crisis appear dim.
Guinea's institutions are too afraid of President Alpha Conde. That is the big problem.
And as schools reopen in Sierra Leone, the local head of UNICEF tells us how they are helping to protect the children from Ebola.
We distributed together with the government and some other partners close to 80,000 hand washing stations. This is buckets with taps.
Those stories and more right here at Africa Link.
Top story.
Let's begin in Guinea's capital, Conakry, where businesses remained closed on Wednesday as police poured into the streets to maintain order after 48 hours of clashes between anti-government protesters and security forces. Conakry had been rocked by violence since the early hours of Monday when hundreds of youth gathered on the main road into the city centre and hurled stones at police. The opposition is blaming the police for the death of three people, but the government denies that security forces shot at the protesters during the demonstrations, during which 50 people were also wounded. Protesters have been demanding for President Alpha Conde to step down. This report by Stephanie Dukstein is now presented by Eunice Wanjiru.
With barricades blocking the streets, stones pelted at security forces, and tires being burnt in Conakry, Guinea's capital, protesters called for President Alpha Conde to step down. The police responded by firing tear gas and bullets into the crowd, but the government denied that security forces had indeed fired into the crowds. Guinea's government spokesman, Albert Damantan Camara, told DW that one person had died, but investigations were still going on.
It has not been confirmed whether he was shot during the demonstration. The corpse was brought to the hospital late at night, 13 hours after the demonstration. Investigations are underway to find out the origin of the fatal shots.
The opposition called for protests criticizing the poor security situation in the country and accusing President Alpha Conde of poor governance. Abubakar Sila, spokesman of the Opposition Alliance and chairman of the opposition party, Union of the Forces for Change, UFC, sees a problem.
Guinea's institutions are too afraid of President Alpha Conde. That is the big problem. He has always been interfering when it comes to opening offices or occupying leading positions. He has systematically placed people who are close to him in top positions. The parliament pushes through every draft law from the president without hesitation, just like the post delivering letters.
Alpha Amadou Bano Bari, a sociologist and professor at the University of Sonfonia in Conakry, talks about the violence in the West African country.
Guinea is a country that is tied up in a pointless spiral of violence. The security forces are not trained well enough to respect civil rights during their operations. They're not even told of its importance. Violence here is normal. There's a general atmosphere of impunity.
Meanwhile, security forces are increasing their presence in Conakry. Residents of the suburb Hamdalaye say their homes have been searched by police and the shops remain closed.
A report by Stephanie Dukstein. Let's pursue this story a little further and explore why the opposition is so keen to hold local elections before the presidential vote. Mark Caldwell has been speaking to Bram Prostumers, a journalist with in-depth knowledge of West Africa, who has just returned from Conakry.
Well, for a number of reasons. The first reason is that the local elections should have been held months and months ago, according to the government's own electoral calendar and also according to the political accords that were made between the opposition and the government in July last year, which put an end to the violence at that particular point in time. The second problem the opposition has is that it alleges that local government, which has a say and an influence in how presidential elections will then continue, that local government has been stuffed with appointees from the ruling party, the Rassemblement de Peuple Guinéen, the RPG, of which Alpha Condé is the president. The government contests these claims and says there is no such thing. There is absolutely no problem with having presidential elections first and local elections later. But the opposition maintains that this is a recipe for massive fraud and that they will therefore contest this particular calendar.
Do you see the two sides agreeing to a compromise?
For the time being, absolutely not. It seems that the positions have been hardening over the months. There was talk of some regional mediation, specifically by the special UN representative for West Africa, Saïd Djinnit, who has been very, very successful in staving off further violence and in getting the two parties to go around the negotiation table. But from all the evidence available to us now, it seems like this is a stalemate that is going to be continuing for some time yet.
How big an issue is pre-election or post-election violence in Guinea?
I think it's a big issue because the response on the government side, on the authority side, to any challenge from the opposition has been more violence, has been repression, has been bringing out the police and the army even onto the streets to stop demonstrations from happening.
Bram Prostumus, you're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party has condemned a wave of attacks against immigrant shopkeepers that has left at least six people dead. Neighbouring Mozambique is planning to help some of its citizens flee from Durban, the largest city in KwaZulu-Natal province, after Malawi announced its own repatriation plan on Monday. As our correspondent Subri Govender reports, there is a great deal of concern about the latest rise in xenophobic attacks.
There's a team of Zulu people, a South African, they come to us and saying, chatting that the king said foreigners must go back to their countries. They start beating us, looting our shop, taking our belonging, and we had no power. We have to call the police. And when the police came, they were not able to control the situation. They just escort us to the police station. And from the police station, there's no way they transport us and bring us in this ground.
Really, 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 there's no future. And the people still tell us, you don't have to stay here. The king say you're not supposed to be here, you must leave.
These are just some of the foreign nationals from Malawi, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Somalia, and Ethiopia who have been attacked, robbed, and booted out of their homes and businesses in several districts in and around the city of Durban. The attacks escalated about 2 weeks ago when the Zulu king Goodwill Zwelithini was reported to have said that foreign nationals must pack their bags and leave. The Zulu king later clarified this by saying that he had only referred to foreign nationals who were committing crimes in South Africa and getting away scot-free. But this did nothing to stem the tide against foreign nationals. The attacks against them spread from the south of Durban to residential townships where Malawians, Somalians, Ethiopians and others operated small trading shops. The Premier of the KwaZulu-Natal province, Senzo Mchunu, and three cabinet ministers, directed by President Jacob Zuma, visited the troubled hit areas to reassure the foreigners of protection and to restore order.
We are very concerned about it. That is why we are calling on everybody, wherever they are. There is no reason to attack other Africans. Nobody should feel unsafe in South Africa because of other South Africans.
The Minister of Home Affairs, Malusi Kigaba, warned that the violence against foreign nationals must end.
Nobody has a right to take the law into their own hands. The police will act to bring violence to a stop. We will arrest and prosecute to send the correct message.
While foreign nationals have welcomed the intervention of government leaders and reassurances given, they still feel unsafe. The African Diaspora Forum says they are concerned that the xenophobic attacks, which started in 2008, had only escalated and more people have died over the past 6 years. In 2008, 62 people were killed, including about 40 foreign nationals. Ms. Aileen Magishu, a spokesperson for the African Diaspora Forum, claims there have not been effective action by the South African government to stem the wave of xenophobia.
More people have died, for instance, over the past year by the violence than those that died in 2008. There is very little response from the government. It's only NGOs that are trying to do something with the UNHCR.
Religious, cultural and non-government organizations and leaders are hoping that the government's latest efforts will bring some sort of solace to foreign nationals.
That was Subri Govender reporting. Children in Sierra Leone went back to school on Tuesday for the first time in 9 months after an enforced absence caused by the Ebola outbreak. Almost 2 million school children were set to return to their classrooms amid a major health and safety operation supported by the UN Children's Agency UNICEF. But how the return to school had been progressing? A question by Mark Caldwell to Roland Monage, the head of UNICEF in Sierra Leone.
On Tuesday morning when the school first opened, the turnout was roughly, based on visiting a large number of schools, around 30%. So it was not that all children came back. This is not something to be immediately worried about. Normally when a new academic year starts in Sierra Leone, it takes about 1 or 2 weeks before all children are back to school. I personally had thought that after such a long closure that many more children would come, but I think a combination of parents not being prepared yet, not having school uniforms and other items, and on the other side, still a concern from the parents about Ebola and in the school environment. I visited one of the schools which was used as an Ebola treatment center in the outskirts of Freetown. UNICEF had there a 20-bed facility. Now we cleaned it all up, and of course the community was very much aware about Ebola because it was right in their own community. It was an emotional moment. The head teacher spoke words of compassion. You could see the seriousness on the faces of the children. So indeed, it's not your regular opening of school year as they normally are experienced.
Now, presumably, your main priority at UNICEF is to stop children catching Ebola and stop them from spreading it. What precautionary measures do you have in place?
In order to get the right measures in place, we developed a national protocol and guidelines for all schools how to open their schools safely. We trained 10,000 teachers in how to use those protocols. We distributed together with the government and some other partners close to 80,000 hand-washing stations. This is buckets with taps, soap, over 55,000 thermometers around the country. So there are all these extra measures in place, also posters and brochures and radio programs, discussion programs, to make everybody aware about what they need to do to make sure that the schools are safe.
What guarantees does UNICEF have that the resources it has made available in Sierra Leone will be properly deployed by the Sierra Leonean authorities?
That's an important question. We have monitors in the field. We have developed an automatization rapid SMS system. And basically we have independent monitors who are going from school to school. And the assessment is that at the moment, we visited over 1,000 schools, that 96% of the schools have hand washing stations in place, thermometers in place and trained teachers in place. The few schools who don't have it in place, it's probably not because the buckets have been taken away, but basically there wasn't an updated list of schools. There have in recent years been a number of schools have been added because of the population growth.
Roland Monage, head of UNICEF in Sierra Leone. And now, high drama and tough choices in this morning's edition of the Crossroads Generation.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hi, everybody. It's time for the final episode of this season of Crossroads Generation.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation. Our future stands today.
Before we get started, let's recap on what's happened so far in the lives of our young heroes. 18-year-old Mercy has a 3-year-old daughter, Linda. Her mother has been taking care of Linda so that Mercy can go to university. But Mercy's mother has had a lot to deal with, protecting her children from the bad influence of their father, Msoto. Recently, Mercy and her boyfriend Nikki decided to get married. But Nikki's mother isn't happy about this at all. So she talked to her new business partner, 19-year-old Dan.
She's the mother of your child, Dan, isn't she?
She is. Oh, I can't believe this. I wanted to ask her if we could get back together once I'd built up my business and saved up a bit.
We have to stop the wedding.
Right now, though, we aren't really sure if there's going to be a wedding to stop. Nikki and Mercy got some very bad news. They found out that Nikki's HIV positive. They had a huge fight afterwards, and later on, Mercy went back to seek advice at the counseling center.
Mercy, I can't tell you how Nikki got infected. He may not even know himself. But is that really what matters now? You were ready to get married. You told me you trusted each other. Nikki needs your support now more than ever before.
I don't know. I have to go.
Our 26th episode is entitled Wedding Bells. We join Mercy in her dorm room at the university.
Mercy, you look so beautiful in my mother's wedding dress. I knew it would fit you.
Thanks for the dress, Tina. But I just don't know if I can go through with this.
Have you asked him about other women?
Nikki insists he's never slept with anyone. He says he's a virgin.
So how?
I don't know. And he doesn't know either. Although back in high school he had some trouble with drugs. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just alcohol and marijuana, but yesterday night I called him and he told me he tried other stuff. Just one time with a needle. One single time. And he doesn't remember whether the other person used the same needle or not.
Oh, come here. Shh. Oh, shh. So, what are you going to do?
I'm going to marry him.
Are you sure you know what you're doing?
Yes, I am. I mean, we'll have to figure out how to live with it. And I'm so scared of everything that will come. But I also know I still love Nikki. When I talked to the counselor again, she reminded me that everybody makes mistakes. Me too. And whenever I've made one, Nikki's always been there for me. He's always supported me. I can't just abandon him now.
Mercy, that's... I don't know what to say. I guess congratulations?
Thanks. Oh, I wish Trudy was here.
Me too. Hey, did you hear that Mukaraba's party did really badly in the election? They only won a few seats in parliament. Nothing for Mukaraba.
Yeah, I hope he'll have his own seat in prison soon.
Yeah,
that's what he deserves after what he and Munene did to Trudy.
Oh, no, not the tears again. Come on, let's go. I guess your family will already be waiting.
Banda, Kadu, don't go too far with Linda and Joy. Your sister Mercy will arrive any minute and then the wedding will start, with or without you.
Hello, Lulu. Hello.
Msoto,
how dare you? I told you not to come near the children again. Have you forgotten the restraining order the judge put on you? You're not allowed within 300 meters of Joy.
Lulu, please. King Karubu says forgiveness.
Stop it. Don't you even start talking about your King Karubu again. You told our son Banda he would be a part of your so-called community if he helped you. And you sent him out begging on the street in the name of King Karubu. You just used this king to make money.
Lulu, I'm sorry. And I assure you, it won't happen again. Anyway, I'm not allowed to preach anymore.
Huh?
The leader of our group called me. He said I'd been misusing the name of King Karubu and that I'm...
You know what, Msoto? I don't care. Just get out of my sight.
Please, Lulu. Please. Just let me see Mercy get married. Look, she's coming. She looks so beautiful.
Listen to me very carefully, Msoto. This wedding is the last time you'll ever see your children. The last time. You hear me? From now on, I will call the police every time you appear if you don't respect my wishes. Is that clear?
Okay.
This building at the end of the road should be the place where Mama Nikki told me to go. And I think that's Marcy arriving over there. Ah, who's calling me? I don't have time now. Hello? Dan Kanyama speaking.
Hello, Dan.
Dad? How did you get my number?
Never mind. Listen, son, I want you to come back home to your country and revive my business. Our business.
What? Dad, not this again. Come on, just leave me alone, all right? I am running my own business over here, and I am doing well.
Oh? And what do you think will happen when I tell the authorities in Kisimba that you're not only there illegally, you're also running an illegal business?
Dad, you wouldn't do that.
I can, and I will.
Dad, wait! Damn! I just don't know how he does it. The same thing over and over again, like a broken record. I can't deal with this now. I have other things to do.
We are gathered here today to celebrate the coming together in marriage of Nikki Jumbe and Mercy Msotho. A wedding is one of life's happy events. A day when you are allowed to shed tears of joy, like the bride, and be happy and make merry. So if there's anyone here who knows of any lawful reason why these two should not be joined together in matrimony, speak now or forever hold your peace. Well, seeing as nobody has spoken...
Wait. Dan?
Oh, no. What's he doing here?
Hello. I am Dan Kanyama, father to Linda, the bride's daughter.
Really? No.
I came here to stop this wedding.
Are you serious?
Because I realized how incredibly foolish I was to lose such pals as Mercy and my daughter Linda.
You don't say.
There is nothing I want more than for us to be together again. But...
What?
How dare you, Dan? I'm going to teach you a lesson.
No, Nikki, don't.
But now I see how healthy and happy my daughter and her mother seem to be. I realize now that no one will be a better father to Linda and husband to Mercy than Nikki. Mercy and Nikki, I wish you all the best.
What?
I don't believe this.
Well, I actually asked if anyone was against the wedding, not in favor. So, as it seems that nobody has any objections, Nikki and Mercy, I now pronounce you man and wife. Congratulations.
And this is where we have to say goodbye to our newlyweds, Mercy and Nikki. To Dan, who changed his mind at the very last minute. To Mercy's parents, her brothers, her sister Joy, and her daughter Linda, at least for now. We've reached the end of this third season of Crossroads Generation Facing the Future. The story was written by James Mohando. Thanks for staying with us to the end. But wait, there's one other person who's still waiting to say goodbye to you. It's Mercy's friend Tina. You can find the final installment of our video diary on our webpage at dw.de/LBE. There you can also listen to all 26 episodes of the series, as well as to previous seasons. Take care and see you next time.
Join us next Monday for the first episode in the fourth season of the Crossroads Generation. Our main story is now here on Africa Link. The opposition in Guinea claims 3 people have been killed and 50 injured in 2 days of clashes in the capital, Conakry. And South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party has condemned a wave of attacks against immigrant shopkeepers that has left at least 6 people dead. That's it for today. For questions and comments, send us a text message to +49 160 9575 9510 or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110. Bonn, Germany. Africa Link will be back at the same time tomorrow. I'm Assumpta Lattus. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful day.